We are going to continue just again praising Jesus, loving Jesus, and I'd like to talk particularly today about having a more personal Jesus, because Jesus is not just meant to be our business, but he is meant to be everything to us, and we are so thankful that he came, that he wanted to be with us, that he stayed a while with us, and that he died for us, and then decided, you know what, I think I'll go back to be with them. And he raised from the dead and came back to be with his disciples. It is a wonderful thing about Jesus. I want you to know Easter's coming up on April the 17th. And a wonderful time for inviting friends to come and join you. And I want you to know one thing that we're going to do on Easter. We're going to talk about Jesus Christ. We're going to talk about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so I want you to have confidence that if you bring a guest at that time, they are going to hear about Jesus. I've been fortunate to have served in several different good works, you might say. In the Kansas City.
It's time to go this way, right?
Kansas City.
I use the left lane to turn left.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't know if it was talk. That's talking to me.
Sorry about that. In Kansas City, we would go to the Downtown Church of Christ because they had a wonderful food pantry there. And we just loved serving with a wonderful lady named Stephanie. I'll tell you more about Stephanie later. But Stephanie's just a wonderful, compassionate person doing great work with people there. And when we first started going, you know, I'm concentrating on, Darren, did you forget anything? You were supposed to bring some canned goods, you know, that were left out. Or there were some other things that were donated. Did you remember to get everything? And they wanted grocery bags. And so did you bring the grocery bags? Stephanie asked you to bring the grocery bags. Anyway, I'm thinking about all the stuff that I don't want to forget. And then we get there, and then comes the work. You know, let's set the canned goods out. Let's get organized. I was often the only guy there that could carry big things of 24 cans, you know, so I'm, okay, I got to get those 24 cans set up there. I got to get the meat out of the freezer. And Stephanie did a wonderful job of giving a very generous bag. She wasn't just, hey, here's a little sandwich and a little, you know, little bag of chips. It was a full bag. And so a lot to think about. And so we get all the work done. Then we started packing things up, you know, a little of assembly line of putting, you know, this in the bag and this in the bag. And we'd stack up those bags at the end. We'd make sure they're just right, ready to go. And at the end of all that, I was like, oh, I feel like we've done good work today. And then I would say to myself, I haven't met a single person who has come here to be helped. And I shamed myself for just a little bit. And I thought, you've been so busy with the stuff that you haven't gone out and introduced yourself to the people. We're not here for the food's sake. We're here for the people's sake. And so we would go out and then start to meet with the people. And yeah, a lot of return visitors. Poverty is not ended overnight. You don't just give one sack out and then, oh, that takes care of everything. They're going to keep coming back over and over again. And so get to know their names. Bill and Trudy come with their two kids, Kevin and David, and got to meet them. And I remember my son Michael and his friend Ben, they came one time. And they went out and visited with a man named Leo. And I tell you, it was awesome to see my son out there visiting. And Leo was there because he had a tough past. A lot of drugs that he had taken, poverty, relationships that had been broken. He's just sharing all this kind of stuff with my son. Also talking about how he's also an artist and is wanting to, you know, is designing things. And I was just so glad to see my son getting to know someone, learning what it is. Hey, we're not here about bags. We're not here about food. We're here about people and how to keep going with that. I'll be honest with you. It is sometimes easy for church to forget people. We've got our business to do. We've got stuff that needs to be done. And sometimes we forget the whole reason we're here, the whole reason he came here was for people. And I think the one person that we forget the most is Jesus himself. We forget that he's the center of who we are. He's the center of what it is to be a Christian. Jack was talking this past week about Acts chapter 11 in our Wednesday night class. I'm plugging the class, Jack, if that's all right. Yeah. But Wednesday night, he was talking about Acts chapter 11, and they're in Antioch. They didn't have a racial description for them anymore. They used to be just a sect of the Jews. And then the Gentiles started coming in, first some Greek-speaking Jews, and then some Samaritans, and now the Greeks and the Gentiles start coming into the church. I don't have a particular now racial identity. I can just point a finger and say, that's who they are anymore. Well, what name do we give them now? I mean, they're not just Jews. What name do we call them? And there in Antioch, it's a beautiful passage, is the first place that they were called Christians, little Christs. As if the identifying marker of that church was not just their racial mixture, although that's wonderful to behold in that early time, but the identifying mark of that church was they loved Christ. And they proclaimed Christ. And he was at the absolute center of who they were. What an incredible title to be given. Those are little Christs walking around in our world. I hope we take pride again in what it is to be a Christian. I want us to remember in this that it's not the trappings of our religion that we are here. And when I talk about the trappings, I could talk about the superficial things like how we dress, you know, or the trappings of the religious talk that we have. I could even go much deeper into the wonderful ordinances that we have of singing and praying, the Lord's Supper, baptism that we celebrate, the preaching that is just awesome today. But oh, we could go into all the trappings of our religion. We could also talk a great deal about the good works that we are interested in doing. Whether it's a charitable work, a benevolent work, as I talked about that pantry that Kimberly and I would go serve at. We might talk about other types of good work, mission work that's often done in all over the world. These are wonderful things that we could talk about. But the works that we call good, even done in Jesus' name, we've got deeper to go than that. We could even talk about lives lived in obedience to his commands, lives of holiness. And yet, even as I know the importance of the commands of Jesus, I know the importance of holiness, still I hear what we already read from Philippians chapter 3, where Paul himself is willing to set aside his own righteousness that comes from the law. Paul, he gives a lot of moral instructions in his letters. It's important to him that they live a holy life. But you know what? He's even willing to set that aside. If it means that at the center of everything, he has the person of Jesus. None of these very good things that we've listed here today can substitute for what it is to know Jesus. And as Paul who could have, he just has an immense amount of credentials of his knowledge, his experience, the souls that he has saved. And at the same time, oh, I wish I could set it all aside if I could just know Christ and be found in him. And I will chase after him to the end of my life and beyond so that I might know Jesus. How can we now return to that kind of life that is beyond the trappings, the schedule, the duty, the commands even, or the works that are done? How do we get past that and go deeper than we've ever gone into that personal connection with Jesus? A passage that we're going to talk about today is from John chapter 12. I didn't realize my projector was messed up like that. I'll fix that later. But in John chapter 12, we get one of these stories that lets us know how important Jesus is, and especially how important it is that he be at the very center of who we are and what we do. And it's a story, I'll admit, Jesus makes a statement in here that bothers me to no end. But it's a statement I need to hear so that I prioritize my faith and life right before him, that my faith can have the kind of substance that it needs. We'll see it in just a minute. But in John chapter 12, beginning in verse 8, Jesus is moving toward Jerusalem. He comes to Bethany, where his good friends are that live there, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Those brother and sisters that live together there. And we've already seen in John chapter 11, he has raised Lazarus from the dead. And so here it is. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived. That's a great statement there. He lived there, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. And here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, which is to be expected. It's not in this gospel, but in other gospels, we see Martha is the one who stays busy and makes sure everything is right. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at table with him. And then Mary. Now we, again, recognize another gospel, that story of Mary, who when Martha is busy about making sure everything is right for her company, not an unworthy goal, very proper for especially her culture in that day. Hospitality is everything, especially when somebody you love is coming. But if you remember that story, it's Mary who isn't helping her sister, but is sitting at Jesus' feet, simply listening. And there is where Jesus says she has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. Here we see this in John chapter 12. Mary, and then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He didn't say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As a keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Of course, basically saying, why wouldn't he use to help the poor? And we're the poor ones here. And Jesus says, leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. Yeah, I'll admit that last statement bothers me. I know Jesus, from what I read in the Gospels, was very interested in the poor. They gathered around him all the time. They came with their different needs. Others for healing, casting out of demons. We know the beggars beside the road, they were very attracted to Jesus, and he invited them close, like the blind person who says, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And he calls him to him. And I know Jesus is interested in the poor. I know that Jesus sees the poor, not just as a project that needs to be done, a duty that needs to be completed. I know he sees them as people, that he himself joined them in their poverty, because we know from other passages, the Son of Man doesn't even have a stone for his pillow at night. He doesn't have a home. He's living off others and what others provide for him and his apostles, their ministry. Jesus joins them in their poverty. This is the one who was born in a manger, whose parents didn't have enough money for the proper sacrifice, so they offer, as the Old Testament allows poor people to do, to offer birds for Mary's cleansing. He's not averse to the poor. He's not scared of the poor. He doesn't put down good works for the poor. He came to serve the poor. So Jesus is not setting aside something unworthy. But Jesus is making a statement here that is beyond worthy. What is most important here in front of you? And Jesus makes a scandalous statement. I would think it would still be somewhat scandalous to us today. What's more important than serving the poor? I am. Oh, you're going to wrestle with that. I think the whole world wrestles with that. That Jesus claims the absolute center of our attention. He absolutely claims that he is the way, the truth, the life. He is the resurrection and the life. He is the bread that has come down from heaven. He is the good shepherd. He just proclaims to that Samaritan woman, when the Messiah comes, he'll teach us all things. Oh, I am, he says. Oh, throughout the whole gospel, Jesus has been doing some wonderful things, but you must know that the Christian religion is not based on doing good things. The Christian religion is based on the centrality of the person of Christ. There is no one, nothing, as good as we may claim it, nothing like Jesus. That's what we're confronted with in this story. And so how can we bring Jesus back to the center? And I'm not just talking about the center of our theology. I'm talking about the center of our hearts, our lives, the center of this body here and the bodies wherever they are, the bodies that claim to be bodies of Christ. How do we return the person of Christ right back to that center? A few things that I'd like to mention. I hope you restore things in your life that, if you're like me, I'm kind of a logical, rational person, but it's time to return some of those things that are nice and fuzzy, warm, fuzzy, touchy-feely things, language that we might use, emotional language that is at the heart of our relationships of the people we adore, spouses and children, people who, grandparents and others who have been so very good to us, and grandchildren, to enjoy again that language of wonder with Jesus and enjoyment of Jesus and a passion for Jesus, to restore that kind of language back to the center of our vocabulary as we talk about, why are you a Christian? Oh, I can't get enough of Jesus. Would that be our response? Why are you a Christian? Oh, what is your church about? Oh, that's the church that just can't get enough about Jesus. What is your worship about? Oh, that's the worship is the place where I come and restore my passion for and my wonder of Jesus. And I start talking about then what is most important, and I can start telling the story of Jesus. Oh, whether it's to watch him, yes, heal a blind man, to have such tenderness on a lame man who's lowered down to a ceiling in front of him. One who so tenderly says, daughter, your faith has healed you, when a woman reaches out and grabs his cloak. Or the one who hangs on a cross and makes ridiculous statements like, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. To a criminal, you'll be with me today in paradise. Or just hangs there and says, it is finished. Or then comes back to his disciples. One of my favorite parts is comes back to his disciples and says, you got anything to eat? And then the most miraculous thing has happened in the whole world. He says, I just want to sit down and eat. I'd have that kind of wonder again, love for, passion, enjoyment of Jesus. Can we return that to the center of who we are? And then the next thing that we can do is to be rather wasteful and even reckless about our worship. Reckless and wasteful. What do I mean by that? Often you think about money, and yeah, maybe money's a part of that. We're reckless about our money, reckless about our time, reckless about our appearance, that we are willing to be somewhat humiliated for the name of Jesus Christ. Humiliated in ways that just seem so, they just seem so useless, impractical to the world around us. Have you ever thought about how impractical prayer is? It just seems so useless. Now, you have plenty of people in this world that will sit here and look at Christians praying and say, what are you useless? Won't they get up and do something? Now, you and I know I'm doing something. I'm doing something what I hope is one of the best things that I could possibly be doing, but it just looks kind of useless to people. But we love to pray. Why? Because we know we have someone who listens. We love to talk to people we love. Wasteful and reckless. But we're going to have a grandchild. Kimberly got me on that last one. You have a grandchild coming up in September. And I've got a daughter-in-law. She's one of the most organized people I've ever seen. You know? Everything's written down in that, you know, plugged into that calendar on her phone. Notes are made. Listings are already being developed on Amazon or any other place, you know, where listings can be. I asked her, are you going to find out the sex of the baby? Yes, I'm going to find out. I got to decide, you know, what we got to decide on a name. We got to decide, you know, like, where's the surprise? You know, that's it. She's not going to do it that way. I love her to death. She's amazing. And she helps keep my son's head screwed on. So we're very thankful for her organization skills. You know, and now I love Helen. She's not going to allow just her organization to get in the way. But let's be honest, children are wasteful and reckless. And the things we do for them are absolutely stupid. Why? Because we love them. I said, God has been tremendously wasteful and reckless toward us. He's given us way more than we deserve. He's more patient with us than we ever needed or expected or deserved. He's so reckless with us. Can we not be reckless? I feel like, Al, we've had some reckless singing this morning. Yeah, I'm not just going to sit here and look good. I want to sound good, too, for my Lord. And I want to have that reckless worship of just giving myself to him. I love to watch a worshiper, as Al's did earlier. I appreciate that, Al. Just his eyes close. Nothing more vulnerable than eyes closing. I don't know what's going to come at you. But you lose yourself in a recklessness of worship. To have that again in our lives. And then another thing that we can do is to approach this Jesus to an intimate position with him. And what Mary has done here probably seemed a little scandalous at the time. She brings out perfume. She goes to his feet. These are very sensitive things. If I might even say romantic things, that might have been a scene in the culture that way. I don't think she's approaching him romantically. I don't think Jesus is accepting it romantically. But it would have had that appearance of romance. And then to undo her hair and allow the hair to fall and to use that hair in a wiping of the feet. Oh, this is a very intimate approach to Jesus. Can we also have that kind of intimate approach to move to a position of real closeness to Jesus? He is actually very welcoming of that. Very welcoming of you coming very, very close to him. One of my favorite musicals, I don't know what you think about it, sorry if you disagree, but Jesus Christ Superstar. I love watching that. And there's Mary Magdalene, not this Mary, but Mary Magdalene in the musical, who sings the song, "I don't know how to love him." Because all the expectations are, you know, as a woman, I should be romantically interested in him. Or I don't know how to love him. Should I just worship him as a hero of sorts? But yet he draws so very close. I don't know how to love him. That's a great question. How do you love Jesus? And I go through my rational things. Well, I serve him, and I go to church, and I sing to him, and those are wonderful. But to move to an even more intimate position, say, I love you, Jesus. Look him in the eye. To kneel before him, or to hold hands with him. As always, one of my favorite things. My grandmother had it on her refrigerator. Footprints in the sand. You guys know that one. And why did only one set of footprints? Well, it was during those times that I carried you. Oh, what a wonderful poem. It gives such an intimate portrayal of our relationship with him. I hope you approach to an intimate position. Hebrews 10 says, because of our high priest, let us approach the throne of God with boldness. And then we look at that throne of God in Revelation 5, and seated on that throne is a lamb that looks as if it has been sacrificed. The lion, we know him as, but the lion's not on the throne. The lamb is something we may approach. Approach to an intimate position. And then finally, continue in the pursuit of his identity. Never give up with what Paul said earlier. I want to know Christ. And never stop that pursuit of getting to know more and more of who he is. Later on in this chapter, John chapter 12, in beginning of verse 20, interesting passage here where it says, now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the festival. They'd come for Passover, probably some of those God-fearers, again, that Acts talks about, Jack, God-fearers who have come in because they're in tune with God, Yahweh, the God of Israel, maybe not proselytes yet, but they come because they want to hear that story again and want to worship the God of Israel. But there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the festival. And they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we would like to see Jesus. Now, you got to understand something right here, and I'll preach on this another time, but seeing is one of the most important themes throughout the book of John. You are constantly invited to come and see Jesus. And these Greeks come saying, we want to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew, and Andrew and Philip went to tell, in turn, to tell Jesus. And Jesus then replies, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Because people have come to see him. That's the same thing that we have today. We have the opportunity to come and to see Jesus. Not just once to catch a glimpse, not like Zacchaeus climbing in the tree just to get a glimpse of him passing by, but we've come to see him and to see him again and to see him again and again, a little closer this time, a little closer, just to keep pursuing Jesus. Again, I hear that when Paul says, not that I have obtained all this. I mean, what else could he's already got everything he needs, doesn't he? He's got an apostle. You know, he's got the rank, he's got the knowledge, very confident of his salvation. What more could that guy want? I just want to know Jesus. And that is something I'll never stop pursuing. Well, today, I hope in our one thing we're going to do in our talk back session, go and be thinking about that. But I want to hear what amazes you about Jesus. I want to hear language of what it is to love Jesus. And I hope we as a church can announce to the world, we have come, yes, to believe in Jesus. But even more than that, we've come to adore Jesus. And want to give our entire being, heart, mind, and soul to him, because we are indeed in love. Let's stand. And how would you lead us in singing?